Usually when we look at a nation's statutes, we expect this long catalog of restrictions.
Right, a list of things you just cannot do.
Exactly. But today's deep dive into the South African Schools Act of 1996, going through updates up to 2011, shows something entirely different. Okay, let's unpack this. We're looking at how a country completely rewires its entire education system to dismantle the history of racial inequality.
And they didn't just do it with, grand political speeches.
No, they use the granular, honestly, kind of tedious mechanics of administrative law.
It's a monumental shift. I mean, if you want to reverse engineer a system that was explicitly designed to segregate, you can't just change the mission statement. You have to change who holds the actual levers of power.
Right.
What's fascinating here is how the act uses bureaucratic rules to literally force the state to surrender its own historical authority.
And the first lever they pull is right at the front door. The law strictly bans public schools from using any admission tests whatsoever.
Burn it all.
Yeah. And it also prevents them from turning away a learner just because, say, the parents haven't paid fees. Or even if they won't sign a damages waiver.
Wow, so no financial gatekeeping.
Exactly. It's not just about removing a bouncer from an exclusive club. It is permanently dismantling the velvet rope. For you listening, think about it like legally stripping away all those subtle administrative filters schools historically use to keep certain demographics out.
Precisely. The mechanism here is what really matters. The Act's preamble is super clear about redressing past injustices and eradicating poverty.
Yeah.
By making it illegal to use financial or academic gatekeeping, the law practically forces integration. I mean, you simply cannot eradicate poverty if the poorest students are legally locked out of the best-resourced public buildings.
But wait, when you mandate that the doors are wide open like that, you immediately run into a new tension.
Which is maintaining order.
Well, yes. Historically, authoritarian systems maintain order through physical force. But this act explicitly bans corporal punishment and hazing practices, too.
Right, to protect human dignity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that brings up a very practical reality. If you remove authoritarian discipline, how does a school actually handle severe threats
Yeah.
like weapons or drugs?
Well, they had to replace arbitrary force with highly regulated safety protocols.
Okay.
So schools can still conduct random searches for dangerous objects or administer non-invasive drug tests, but the law wraps these actions in really strict human rights caveats.
What kind of caveats?
For example, if a search involves a learner's person, it has to be done in private and by someone of the same gender with the same gender witness present.
Oh, wow. So it's a calculated balance.
Yeah, maintaining physical safety while legally stripping educators of the power to humiliate or physically dominate students.
Okay, so the state strips away its own authoritarian tools. But here is where it gets really interesting to me. The state doesn't just step back, right? It legally mandates who steps in.
Yes, the governing body.
Right. Every public school has to have one, and the law requires that parents hold exactly one more seat than all other voting members combined.
Which is a fascinating mathematical formula.
And it includes teachers, staff, and even eighth grade students get a legal seat at the table.
Eighth graders, wow. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, that formula where parents always have the absolute majority is the ultimate act of decentralization.
Yeah.
Administrative law is being used to legally bind the government from interfering in local school governance. They just handed the steering wheel directly to the local community.
But wait, I have to challenge this a bit. Handing power to local parents sounds wonderfully democratic.
Yeah.
But in a country still recovering from massive spatial and economic segregation, doesn't that just risk entrenching the divide?
What do you mean?
Like, if you have a wealthy neighborhood, those parents could just vote to charge high fees and keep their school heavily resourced, while poorer communities are left struggling.
That is the exact vulnerability of decentralization. It's a brilliant point,
Yeah.
but the government recognized that risk and tried to counter it with a highly specific funding mechanism.
Right, the quintile system.
Exactly.
For those of you who might not look at statistical models every day, a quintile just divides a population into five equal groups. So here, the government ranks schools from poorest, which is quintile one, to wealthiest, quintile five.
Based on the surrounding community's income and literacy rates.
Yeah. And the poorest quintiles are strictly no-fee schools,
Yeah.
fully funded by the state.
Yes. And for the wealthier quintiles that actually can charge fees, they can only do so if that parent majority actively votes for it.
Okay.
Even then, the law forces them to grant fee exemptions to any individual parent who just can't afford it.
So the state uses the quintile system to aggressively target its financial resources at the bottom.
Exactly. while leveraging the private wealth of the top tier to fund the rest, without allowing that top tier to exclude poorer students from their neighborhood.
So what does this all mean for you listening? It's a masterclass in how you don't just decree equality, you have to engineer it.
It really is.
It's about taking the state's centralized power, breaking it apart, and legally distributing it to the people actually using the system.
It is social engineering through bureaucracy. It shows that real reform isn't just about changing what people are taught, you know? It's fundamentally changing who gets to decide how the building operates.
It completely rewires the power dynamic. But it does leave us with a provocative thought to end on.
Ooh.
If the law mathematically guarantees that parents hold the ultimate veto power in a school's governing body, what happens when a highly conservative local community's priorities clash entirely with a progressive national government's educational goals?
Who actually wins that standoff?
Exactly. Something for you to ponder until next time.